From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. The city and borough of Juneau needs to make good on its plans to combat the local effects of climate change. That's one of the takeaways from a climate report released today. The study, undertaken by a research center at the University of Alaska Southeast, is meant to inform citizens and serve as baseline information for city leaders. Jim Powell is a UAS research professor and its lead author.
There are two messages. One, there are many impacts. Two, we are doing something about it. For a small community, that's pretty impressive.
In Juneau, precipitation has already increased by 20 inches a year in the last century and will continue to rise. Ocean warming will stress local marine ecosystems. More landslides will happen as the region gets warmer and wetter. Powell says the study comes with recommendations that are within reach on a local level.
Local government is able to move forward when polarization is occurring at the national side and stateside. Local governments are making it happen, and that's why this report is really important, because we're looking at the impacts as well as the things that we can do and things that we've done.
The city has already taken some steps to address climate change. Juneau was the first port in the world to connect cruise ships to hydropower in 2001, and it's considering expanding that program from one dock to three. The study recommends going even further than that, investing in 100% shore power for all cruise ships, limiting the number of ships in port to five, and monitoring ship emissions while in port. Powell praised the city for setting a goal to have 80% renewable energy by 2045 and for having a plan in place to address climate. But the study recommends the city go further by creating metrics to report progress on its goals to the public.
It's important to have goals. If you don't have indicators, you can't manage. If you haven't have goals, you can't manage.
The study was made possible by volunteer effort from more than two dozen Alaska scientists. Most of them live in Juneau. Funding came from the City and Borough of Juneau and the Department of the Interior. Some of the study's authors will host a webinar about their work at 9 a.m. on Thursday. There's a link on our website, ktoo.org. The Oversight Board for Alaska's ferry system is recommending the state add crew quarters on another ship originally built as a day boat. The board also heard this month that the state is still pursuing a new terminal in Lynn Canal to shorten the ferry run between Juneau, Haines, and Skagway. KFSK's Joe Vicnicki reports.
The Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board makes recommendations on the direction of the state-run ferry system. Created last year, it's been meeting every 2 weeks since this February. In early July, the board approved a resolution that recommends adding crew quarters along with other upgrades to the Taslina. That was built at the Ketchikan Shipyard, completed in 2018, and it's one of two new Alaska-class ferries. The resolution calls for the project to be included in the state's program for transportation improvements. Board Vice Chair Juanetta Ayers of Anchorage said she's been a skeptic of the addition, but now thinks it makes sense for flexibility.
From a long-range standpoint, I feel that we have to pursue standardization of the Alaska-class vessels in order to maximize versatility, community service, and interoperability of the vessels.
The state designed the new ships as day boats without overnight space and operated by a smaller crew as a cost savings measure. They were meant for use in Lynn Canal along with a proposed road extension that never happened. The lack of cabins, however, limits the routes those can sail. The Taslina did some service in 2019 and 2020, but her sister ship, the Hubbard, has not been used. The state is already paying around $15 million to add those crew quarters on the Hubbard. On the Taslina, it's estimated the addition will cost around $18 million. During the summer, the Marine Highway wants to run the Taslina Inland Canal through a new ferry terminal at Cascade Point. That's 27 miles north of the ferry terminal at Auk Bay near Juneau. The state's in discussions with Goldbelt, Juneau's urban native corporation, about developing a terminal on Goldbelt's land there. It was one recommendation by a Marine Highway Reshaping Work Group in 2020. Department of Transportation Commissioner Ryan Anderson told the board that the project has been on pause since April of last year, but the DOT wants to continue working on it.
Basically, you know, when we look at these things, there's some public benefits to Cascade Point, one of them being cost savings. There would be a reduction in fares for the public to do this. So about a 25% is a very round number about what people could expect. There'd also be a time savings. You know, there's the times, granted you have to drive further, but even with the drive, I think we came up with, it's about an hour and a half, one way of time savings for the public.
Ferry managers say the new terminal would cut about 30 miles off Lynn Canal sailings and allow the ship to operate within a 12-hour time frame. Goldbelt says it would operate a bus for walk-on passengers getting on or off the ferry at Cascade Point. The operations board heard some pushback on the proposal, however. It would require driving between ferry terminals. Ferry Columbia Captain Gabriel Bayless thought it's the wrong direction for the system.
I walk on, and sometimes I'll have a double bob stroller for my kids, Costco groceries, a dog and a kennel. And it's hard enough getting to Auk Bay. And to get on a Gold Belt bus, I think we're really moving away from where we want to go as a system. I think we should be simplifying things, not making them more complicated.
The board also heard a presentation from Gold Belt President and CEO McHugh Pierre about that corporation's interest in the project, but did not vote on any recommendation on a Cascade Point terminal. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
In other ferry news, the Alaska Marine Highway System has reopened bars on two state ferries this year. The state ferry system in late May and early June started serving beer and wine on two ships, the Matanuska and Kennecott. Alaska Department of Transportation spokesman Sam Dapsevich says existing personnel are able to open the bars on these two ships for limited hours.
And we're serving like Alaskan Brewing Company beer and bottles and cans. We have some wines, seltzers. We're also serving like popcorn, chips, and pretzels. And we're working towards offering prepackaged mixed drinks. And so far, the response has been very positive. We've collected, through our online survey system, we've collected quite a few positive comments.
Marine Highway closed bars on its ships in 2015 as a cost-saving measure, estimated to save the system $750,000 a year at that time. But Dapsevich says this year, ferry managers were looking for ways to improve the travel experience.
I think the consensus from our AMHS team was, yeah, let's if we can do it, let's do it. So we had some discussions with personnel, and we've also had some logistics that had to be worked out. As you know, we're already dealing with staffing shortages, so we wanted to see how we could do it without having to hire specific bartenders. And we came up with a plan. Everybody agreed to it. And now it's working, and it seems to be a good decision.
The Matanuska offers service between Bellingham, Washington, Prince Rupert, British Columbia, and Southeast Alaska this summer. The Kennecott has sailings from Bellingham to Kodiak. The service could expand to other ships operating this year. With many thousands of lightning strikes over the last 24 hours and gusty winds, red flag wildfire danger warnings remain in effect for a large area of the central and eastern interior. Fire Information Officer Jose Acosta says the state set a red flag record on Sunday.
It was the 10th consecutive day of red flag warnings, and that surpassed a 9-day run in 2015.
Acosta says rain showers received so far have not been near enough to stop the wildfires.
It's still staying far drier than we would like because of the underlying moisture conditions in the soil and the trees and then the fuels.
Over 2.6 million acres have burned so far this season. There are more than 250 active fires across the state. Former President Donald Trump made good on a pledge to come to Alaska and punish U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski for turning against him in his last days in office. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports on his Saturday campaign rally in Anchorage.
Trump spoke for 90 minutes to a full house at the 5,000-seat Alaska Airlines Center, giving a version of his standard rally speech with added Alaska references. He endorsed Republican Kelly Chewbacca for U.S. Senate and let his disdain for Murkowski fly.
But she voted to impeach me, and I did more for this state than any president in history. And that piece of... voted to impeach me.
Trump silently mouthed the word garbage in that pause there. He shared his stage with Chewbacca, who praised Trump and accused Murkowski of helping President Biden.
Guess what, President Trump? She's become Biden's CEO. Yeah, She's his chief enabling officer. Anything Joe Biden wants done, Lisa Murkowski delivers it. Yep.
Trump also endorsed former Governor Sarah Palin, now a candidate for Alaska's open U.S. House seat. She had the crowd roaring and cheering as she vilified Democrats, government, and the media. Palin says this year's midterm elections are about good versus evil. And using the vocabulary of gun culture, she passed on words of wisdom she says she got from her dad.
Well, my dad's words exactly were, "Don't retreat, reload."
When Trump endorsed Governor Mike Dunleavy, some boos were mixed in with the cheering. A number of rally attendees had campaign buttons promoting more conservative challengers, Charlie Pierce and Christopher Kirka. Dunleavy wasn't there. A spokesman said he's traveling out of state on official business. Another sign of Trump's thirst for vengeance against Murkowski is that he castigated U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan for not denouncing Murkowski.
And Dan Sullivan should never, ever have given her an endorsement. Dan Sullivan should be ashamed of himself.
Murkowski's campaign responded after the rally with a few factual corrections, among other things, on the King Cove Road. Trump claimed credit for it.
Road, I got you Cove Road, or whatever the hell they call it. For 50 years, they've been trying to get the highway, right? I got that.
Murkowski and the entire congressional delegation have been trying to get a road for King Cove for years, and they advanced the controversial project during the Trump administration. Murkowski's campaign notes that it would be a single-lane gravel road, not a highway, and it's not built yet. Trump made no campaign announcement of his own, but he sounded like he might be a presidential candidate again. That would make 71-year-old Denise Dotson happy. She got up at 4 a.m. to drive in from Wasilla and was among the first in line for the Trump rally at 6 a.m.
Because I hope and pray to God that we can get him back in, because we need God back in our life, we need church back in our life, we need our kids to be taught properly in school, our history, instead of teaching them this gender shit.
Attacking liberal views on gender was a repeated theme at the rally, which at times seemed like a right-wing cultural celebration as much as a political event. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
And that is it for the KTOO News Update for Monday, July 11th, 2022. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.